Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 23rd of March Aries Working Group call in 2022. We have good topics today. Glad you're here. This is a hyperledger call. And so the antitrust policy and the hyperledger code of conduct are in effect. This call is obviously recorded and will be posted afterwards. Is there anyone new or returning or whatever that would like to introduce themselves?
I could go quickly. My name is Philippe Foucault. I'm from, I'm working for one of the provincial government in Canada, so the province of Quebec. And I am innovation lead at what we call our Quebec Digital Center of Excellence. And I'm participating in the in a pan-Canadian effort on SSI. So, yeah. So starting to join those different group calls on the different layers of Hyperledger that we will need for an SSI project.
Glad you're here. We have been grateful for all of the many useful contributions by our by Canadians. We're happy to have more of you. Anybody else? Awesome. We're glad you're here. Announcements, IW is coming up. I don't have a link there. Many of us have been there before, and I encourage you to try and attend if you can. It is in person rather than online this time, which I know presents some additional logistical challenges. But I also, there's a lot of value in being in person for many of these discussions. And it's a great conference, the best conference I've ever regularly attended. Good there. Also, we've got the Identity Implementers call, and Keila Shatskin is talking about Cardia and the Interopathon that they just held. Any other announcements that we should have on the list but don't?
Yeah, one is, Sean's here as well, there is a call out from Hyperledger for the Summer of Docs, I think it's called, but a organization of adding documents to various open source projects, so open source docs contributions. It would really be nice to organize some for Aries. I'm thinking that, you know, Aries RFC could really use a welcoming structure that would allow people to understand, so we wouldn't get comments about what the heck are our Aries RFCs and how do you navigate them and things like that. I think that would be a super one. I know ACAPI could use a revamp of and reorganization of the documentation and again introduction and welcome.
Is this just the writing of text, Stephen, or is it like improving the mechanics of docs in any way?
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, please.
Oh, I was going to say, it's a Google-funded program connecting open source projects with technical writers to upgrade the documentation, not necessarily the mechanics of documentation, but the documentation itself. The Aries JavaScript framework team, thank you, Timo, has gotten an application. We're putting that in. There is a deadline, March 25th, which is Friday, to get it in. This is a funded program. So, Google is going to put up, money to pay a technical writer to work with an open source community. The challenge is everybody on Aries is heads down getting stuff done. We did not have enough lead time at Hyperledger to make this more of a thing within all the different community groups. And there's work to be done on the community side to work with the technical writer who's going to be, you know, looking at and upgrading and updating the documentation. So it's not a, you know, one and done person joins and starts working on the docs. They're going to need help. They're going to need to work with the community. It's as much adding a new contributor as it is anything else. In this case, a contributor who's working on technical documentation as opposed to code. I did put the main Google form into the chat here in Zoom. I'll put it into the Aries Discord after this. As I mentioned before, Timo's gotten an application for Aries JavaScript framework. So we're processing that and getting that in there. And it does, the URL I just provided does include a section on, you know, sort of what does the administrator have to do? What are the responsibilities on the project side of what needs to get done? So this was late getting it to y'all. We are definitely doing this in 2023, and we're going to talk about it a lot more in Q4 of this year to get the projects excited and get applications in. Is the first year I believe we're doing this, but yeah. If there are folks on Aries who are willing to take this on and have the time in the next 2 days to get an application together, we'd be happy to get that in.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean and Stephen, for highlighting this. Awesome work, Timo, being ahead of all the rest of us and making that happen. And if we can put some work in here, then that sounds like a great way to have funded help for this, which is great. Cool. Any other announcements?
Just a quick question on this. Is it like for the Aries JavaScript proposal, like I really wrote three alineas, it was not much work. Is that all you need also for general Aries?
David and I are going over it, and I'm comparing it to some. There are a number of people have put their applications on out there as like blog posts and stuff. Here's what we applied for Season of Docs. So David and I are comparing what you wrote and what another team wrote to those to make sure we've got the best chance of getting it approved. This is not you apply and you get it, but we're David and I are going to go through it and make sure if there's anything else we need, I'll reach out to you, Timo.
Okay, yeah. Because I think it's really, really useful to also have for the general Aries repos. And I'm willing to also to like if they need someone technical to help the technical writer, I'm willing to invest some time in on it. Or think our employees, it's also something, it's a good learning thing also. So sure. If you need anything, I'm happy to help.
I'm probably going to reach out later today on Discord. Even if you're not around, I'll leave you a note just so you know where we're at. David and I are meeting after 12 Eastern.
Doug, are you looking for the agenda that I've got on the screen? I just pasted that back in the chat. Yeah. Zoom has this annoying feature of not showing you what happened in the chat before you joined. So I have to periodically redo that and hadn't yet. So there you go. Cool. Steven, you mentioned Aries RFCs. Is that something that you can be willing to talk with Timo about and see if you can get something in?
I'm going to say no. I've just got too much going on right now. And that's why I wanted to bring it up here to see if anyone else could take up. You know, from my point of view, Aries RFCs, the repo is not friendly to those coming in. You know, we were talking to a newcomer today and he sort of didn't know what AIPs were and things like that. And that's really the core of what Aries RFC. So as we've evolved, some of the earlier stuff we built made sense to the community, but wouldn't make sense to a newcomer. And that's the type of thing that I'd like to see evolve. Aries RFC is a big one to me.
Exactly. Timo, I agree. We need a volunteer here to work with Timo to get that in, and we've got 2 days to make it happen. Is there anyone here that can volunteer for to make that happen just here in the next 2 days? It could probably even be done today-ish, depending on what needs to get written. And Timo has already volunteered to be involved. But we should get someone else who's willing to help him on the broader spectrum of things. Nathan, is there any chance you can spare some time or spare somebody with the time?
Not sure with that turnaround whether we can, but we'll take a look.
Okay. Is there anyone else that is willing to, upon a moment reflection, make that happen? Okay. Timo, perhaps Nathan, and I will see if I can spare some time later today to try and make that happen. I know that doesn't line up nicely with your schedule. But I'll try and communicate with you about that later today and see if we can line something up before the end of tomorrow. because that seems like a good opportunity and in a relatively quick thing to do in the next couple of days. Cool. Okay. Release status and work updates. Does anyone have updates to their project that they want to highlight and surface to the community?
Two things. Ares Agent Test Harness, lots of action happening on that. All of the work on Test Harness is done by the individual projects, taking a look at their set of tests, either adding more tests or making sure that their tests are running. And I encourage all the Ares frameworks to be monitoring the tests and making sure that nothing's changing and that the things that worked yesterday are not that don't work today get fixed and things like that. So that's one. Particular, I'll add that there's now some DIDCOM V2 tests and what's called wacky tests in the suite, and those are being executed by some of the frameworks. So an interesting addition that we've got now some DIDCOM 2 things in that, and that shows how we're going to be able to evolve all of the frameworks as things change in the community. We do it, you know, in the library, we do it in the test harness to make sure that we've got interoperability as we build these pieces out. So that's one. Second is Ares Cloud Agent will be starting on the 0.7.4 release, have a release candidate probably this week. There's a couple of PRs we want to get nailed down before we do that, but we're pretty close on having a 0.7.4 release candidate. And secondly, for those that are interested in persistent queues in ACAPI, we've taken a different approach. So it's not going to be core to ACAPI, but rather a plugin when you want to use persistent queues. So something like Redis for persisting messages while they're queued up and ready to be processed. And so we're taking a slightly different approach, taking what we had built into ACAPI and rather moving it out into a separate repo that is a plugin, so that when you want to have that functionality, you bring the plugin into your deployment of ACAPI. So that's a good thing. It also means we don't have to wait on 0.7.4 to have that added to it. So two things going on in ACAPI there. That's it.
Awesome. And I believe that the DIDCOM V2 and Wacky Peck stuff was added by the Ares Go team.
Yes. Yeah, it was added by the Ares Go team. And yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Any other updates for projects? You know, there's lots of work going on and appreciate all of the efforts. Bring those along. We have two. This is not accurate anymore. We have two topics on the list today. Timo, you had talked about did auth pre-credential, which I do have on the schedule today. In my work this week, an issue came up around did exchange signatures, and so I was hoping to address that first. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent. So those are the two things that we have on the agenda. Are there any adjustments we should make before we get going? Okay. This is a PR that I have made. Here is a related issue that sort of brought this to light and surfaced the issue about accepting peer dids without a signature, et cetera. I went and looked at the DID exchange protocol as promised. And one of the problems that it actually had was that in the example here, in the example request, it showed a signature on across the DID document in the request itself, which was wrong. I went to get blame to figure out who is responsible for this mistake, and it turns out to be me. I in the process of converting attachment signatures the way we were doing it, I went and incorrectly applied that to the RFC, and it wasn't caught by anybody, including me, until now. And so having the request information does not need to be signed at all. the response information is actually signed. So these are just all examples in the request that I'm removing this. We're still transferring the DIDDOC as an attachment, but the signature is not needed there at all. So that's really what this PR does. But as Timo correctly commented on the PR, that this ought to say something about the actual signatures that exist in the response, which are not yet part of this PR. It's shown in the example, but there's no discussion of what key should actually be used for this. And so I wanted to bring this up and talk about this today. And there's a complicating factor that has existed because of development elsewhere in the DID peer spec that may mean that some adjustments are needed. And so we can discuss if we want to do those adjustments now or what we're doing. By way of wrapping up the sort of the introduction to this topic, the intent in that's actually present. I've got the response section of the connection protocol here, and that has the language that managed to be removed before this one. The intent of having the signature there is that this is the signature used in the invitation. That the user is the inviter is the person who generates the invitation and then also sends the response message. And the purpose of signing the DID document here is so that the recipient of the DID document, the person who sends the request message, actually has the key out of the invitation. The key is used to then sign this DID document, and that party can know that this is basically an authorized move from the invitation. Or from the key used in the invitation to now this DID document is being presented as part of the DID exchange response. And so that is the key to be used, which is not actually referred to in this text. And the key upon receiving the response message and decrypting it and checking the signature, the receiving party, this is the person that scanned the QR code should also verify that this is the key that was present in the invitation. And so that's the text that's actually missing. Here's the wrinkle. Because of the development of DIDCOM PeerDID Method 2, which allows for the encoding of all of the DIDDOC relevant stuff that you would need into the actual DID itself, it's possible to use a PeerDID method too in this place and not attach a DID document at all. The DID still resolves to the same information, so that's not a problem. The problem is that we don't sign across the DID, we just sign across the DID document, which means that without passing a DID document, there's not actually a way to verify that the person that sent this message is in possession of this key at all. And so that's the fun bit. Do we just correct the text in here about signing across the DID document and ignore not signing across the DID? Or do we adjust DID exchange to sign across the DID either instead of or in addition to the attached DID document? That's the question. Any questions? Do I need to clarify anything or did I say anything incorrect? The reason this matters a lot is that this is, of course, identified in AIP v2. And so we need to make this happen. And it needs to happen in a way that's sane. Opinions? Did I run through that too fast?
I guess the easiest way would be to still require the DID doc to be present, right? Because how would that work? This is not just a problem for pair DIDs, right?
You're right. It's technically a problem if you are exchanging a DID that isn't sort of the old style pre-peer DID, like peer DID method -1. Then that's still a problem. So for example, if you wanted to respond back with a different DID, which is allowed, but it doesn't have an attached DID document, then this is still a problem. And I'm like mind blown that I didn't think of this before.
Yeah, even with public DID, it's a problem, right?
Yep, it's absolutely a problem. Anytime you use a DID that doesn't need to pass an attached DID document, it's a problem, which is, that's expanding because of the progress of the did peer method. So you're right, Timo, we could just also require the did doc to be attached in this manner, but that feels very redundant and could open up a handful of edge cases where there's disagreement between the information in the did here and in the attached did document, which could be a nice place to stub your toe in this process.
It also feels like if someone has a resolvable did that's cheap to retrieve, it kind of seems really redundant to require someone to put too much here.
Totally.
Yeah, but there's really no reason to sign the did document, right? That you could also add something else to the message and just sign it as long as it's a signature with a key from the did document.
That is true. This old style would work as well, as long as the attached did document actually identifies the did. So one of the things we could do here is switch to requiring a signature across the did. That would mean you're bringing the did along as an attachment in order to invoke the similar signing mechanism of signing attachments, which is a little weird, but could certainly be done. In this case, we wouldn't really need to Base64 encode the data to be signed. It could just be a string itself, only I'm not actually sure we just have a string format for the data. It's usually JSON or Base64.
And as a side question on how we have the encryption envelope V2, I'm not too familiar with it and all the different types of crypto that's being used here, but the invitation, wouldn't having other key types make it, let's say I have an invitation key, but currently we have like the matching between ED25519 keys and X25519 keys, right? But will that also not be a problem with other crypto mechanisms where you can't transform it between a signing and an encryption key, so you couldn't create a signature with the invitation key?
So I'm looking at out of band here, and I believe that I'm trying to look and see what we actually accept here. You have to have a service block here, which is either a did, which then contains a key using some proper representation, or it contains an actual service block. And I'm looking for an example here. And the service block could contain an actual key for the recipient key. And I believe we specified the did key is to be used here, which means that in this case, with the key encoding problem would actually be solved using out of band and did exchange, I believe, Timo. Unless I misunderstand your question.
Well, if we have a did key if we have a key agreement key, X25519 key, we can go from an ED25519 key to an X25519 key. So that allows the same key to be used for encryption and also for signing.
Right.
But I don't think that's true for all mechanisms, right? So if I create an invitation using an key agreement key that is not X25519, how would I create a signature using that did key if it's only a key agreement key?
I see your point. So if the key actually passed here is not an ED25519, it's being passed as a recipient key, which is a key agreement key, instead of a verification key, which cannot be automatically derived for anything except ED25519 keys. In which case, they'd be unable to actually sign anything using that key. They can encrypt the message, or they can decrypt the message rather. And in this message here, in did exchange, the response is actually sent encrypted with the new key that they're providing. And so how to make that work is the point, right?
Yeah.
That is a super good related issue. That's in addition to the one that I had thought of.
I mean, for DITCOM V2, where you always have DIT and we don't have just inline servers anymore, you could just require that an invitation always, we don't need to sign it anymore because you don't have the DIT exchange protocol then, of course.
We still have out of band, but we don't have DIT exchange, which means that this is handled differently. And so we don't have this precise problem.
Yeah.
So this is also a problem, but orthogonal to the original one of what we sign across. This is a little ugly, but one of the things that we could do is specify that when passing a non-peer DID, so you're not passing a DID document, we could just use some value, perhaps a nonce that we agree on the format of or something as the DID document itself. It's a little ugly because it's a special case. It does prevent from having to pass the DID doc twice, which could be both annoying and a source for errors, but would still get the signature across. Or perhaps what we do is that what you actually sign is the DID itself. In the case that you're not passing a DID document, that would keep the structure of the message roughly the same, but would require semantic differences in processing. Because you may be receiving a DID as a string instead of a whole DID document. Given a time machine, I would go back and not commit this error in the first place, but we're here and we got to figure out what we want to do about it.
I think signing the DID makes a lot of sense because that's actually what you want to say, this DID I'm going to use, I'm signing it with this old key. So I basically endorse the key rotation that I have done between these steps. And it's something we already have. So we don't have to define a new thing to sign because we just assign the DID. It may be, if we need to make the DID an attachment, it can feel weird, but I think it would work.
Other thoughts and opinions?
I'm in agreement with Timo on this one, I think. Coming up with a separate value to have to sign seems strange, especially when semantically, signing the DID makes a lot of sense.
This would, I believe, require a version of this protocol, a major version change, which means that this would be DID exchange 2.0 in order to do this. Steven?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's good because that gets us our transition method.
It does get you transition method, but it does also mean, are we going to adjust AIP V2 to point to exchange 2? So there's a weird middle ground where we remove the keys as I've done in this PR already. We remove the inappropriately attached signatures to the request. We clarify the source of the key for the response. And then we do nothing else. And I believe that qualifies as a clarification just by itself.
Say that again.
We include the changes here where we remove the signatures from the request, which should not have been there in the first place. And in the response, we clarify where this key actually comes from. And we just note that this only works if it's an ED25519 key.
Yeah. Which, I think that's a viable thing to do right now. For where we are in the community and where we are with to say, okay, it's only working for ED25519, I think that's okay.
it's not future perfect, but exactly. But I believe it would be okay. And I believe that qualifies as a clarification, which means we can update the DID exchange requirement to the new commit that clarify these things. And then we can leave the problem of non-ED25519 keys and DIDs that don't need a DID doc attached to a future release of the protocol that is not included in AIPv2.
Okay, so what does that do for existing implementations, though? If somebody sends it out in this, does everybody have to implement a handles both ways?
I'm thinking along the same lines. I think even just the adjustment on, you know, signatures are not a part of the request, I think that's going to be a breaking change for implementations.
Well, you can still send them. It will just ignore them. Which means that unless you're expecting the signatures to actually be there, that would be a breaking change. But if you're producing the signatures, number one, using what key is a question. I'm a little bit shocked that we've got this far before someone said, why in the heck are we putting a key there? Or are we signing? What key are we signing with for the request?
Yeah.
I think the signing key is the key of the DID that was created, is how it's been implemented, which...
That's probably the sanest assumption I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so we implemented this recently in the toolbox, and like at the time it didn't seem crazy. I understand that, you know, having a signature isn't strictly required on the request, but I think at this stage implementations are expecting the signature. So saying that it is no longer signed, I think would be a bit of a problem, I guess.
But I think it only, like this error only comes up, I think that maybe why no one has run into it before is if you do key rotation, I think most implementations, if you start from a pair that they don't do the rotation. And it's also only a problem if you use something that doesn't have a DID doc attached. And I know, for example, Ekapias, if you start with a public DID, it will then still create a pair DID relationship and attach the DID document. So I think the use case is maybe of really small area. So if there's like no one that actually uses this way of implementing it yet, we would need to look at that. But then we could look at keeping the old way the same for now and just adding a clarification. If you want to do this specific use case, like using a DID without a DID document, then you should take this route. And then it's more an addition instead of a breaking change.
If it's an addition that requires other people to understand it, then that would be a problem. So your point, though, Timo, with your suggestion earlier, is that if you did want to do this with a DID that didn't require a DID document, also attaching the DID document would make it this basically a minor addition instead of a more breaking change. But if you didn't have a DID document and you passed something other than a DID document or didn't pass a DID document, that would be a breaking change for everyone else. So to maintain the compatibility, the simplest possible thing to do, it's a little ugly, but the simplest possible thing to do is simply require that still passing the DID document itself, even if your DID technically doesn't require it. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, yeah. I just think nobody has implemented this because they probably would have run into this issue then.
I think probably. The issue specifically is that you're using a DID peer method too that doesn't require the DID, it contains all the information in order to construct the DID document instead of requiring one to be attached. That's the specific issue that Timo is pursuing that caused him to be aware of this issue. And so, Daniel, you're saying that for the request, you were just signing it with the key that was in the DID document that was being signed, right?
Right.
So the other thing we could do here is not actually change this at all and leave these requirements in place, since that was what we had, and simply add some language to, you know, a note that this was redundant, but we left it in there for existing implementation reasons. And that way, when we evaluate this in the future, we're aware that this didn't, of that fact.
I mean, anything we can do, I think, to prevent a breaking change would be nice, because otherwise we have to implement the did exchange v2 and like then expecting all implementations again to update to did exchange v2 that will probably take a long time. So I'm not sure if that's worth the effort, instead of then, for example, coming up with a hacky solution that the did document should be signed, which I think is more clarification at the moment, because it says you need to sign the did document.
So instead, I could kill this PR and add language that explains which key is to be used for both the request and the response, and leave it as is. Existing implementations that have already built it this way would not need to change. And there's some clarification about which key should be used, which is not actually said here, but we could add the clarification for the assumptions that people have already made. I got a thumbs up from Daniel on that one. And then we just leave it as is. I might also add a note at the bottom saying this only works for 825519 keys. And technically the request signature is redundant, but left in as a requirement for compatibility. Steven, any thoughts there?
That sounds like the right path. I mean, if we haven't run into it, it's because people haven't implemented. And so now all we got to do is guide the new implementations, adding the new, in the method too. So I think that's right.
Well, it isn't just for method two. It's also for just using public dits in general.
Yes, yes. No, I get you.
Okay, I'm gonna keep typing this. And does anyone disagree with this course of action? Or have a better way? Okay, I'm going to keep working on this comment. Timo, I can turn over the screen to you, and that way you can talk about did auth pre-credential. Is that okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, take it away.
All right, can you see my screen?
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, so I was thinking a bit about when you want to issue a W3C JSON-LD credential using Hyperledger RIs. There's a bit of a problem with doing DID authentication beforehand. I think Indeed just solves this for you. And the current RFCs don't really mention a way to do this. So let's say I want to issue a credential to a connection I have. I sometimes need to have a credential subject ID to be able to link it to a specific DID. And the question is, how do I get that DID? Well, the holder could just provide it in the credential when they do the negotiation. But then you don't know that the holder actually is the owner of that DID. So you would want to ask and let it prove that they own the DID. So I was thinking a bit about ways to do that, and there's quite a lot of ways. And I was just wondering if anyone has looked at this already. and whether they think one of their approaches is good. And what I would like to do is look at the different approaches and maybe come up with an approach that we think we could work well for Hyperledger ARIs, and then maybe create an RFC with guidance on, like, if you want to authenticate a DID subject before issuing a credential, these are the steps you can take. So it's something ARIs agents can implement and we can become interoperable up that front. There are a few ways to do it, and I think each have their up and downside. So I can go over the methods in a bit, and then like what I think may be the best for now. You have a really simple, you have the VP request spec defined by the Durba3C. And I think what's nice about this, it's really simple, and you just send a query and you say, I want to do DID auth challenge domain, and you get a self-signed verifiable presentation without any credentials, where you say, and the holder is this, and I sign it using that same DID, a key from that DID, which basically authenticates the DID. Problem of this is we don't support it in ARIs. We would need new attachment format in the registry. We need to do a separate run of the present proof protocol. But it is a very minimal API to do data authentication. There's another way.
Timo?
Yeah?
Quick question on that. Where does the domain come in?
What do you mean?
The example.com, domain example.com. Sorry, I'm not sure of that.
Yeah, that's also something you have here. I think that is to scope something to a specific domain. So if I issue you a credential with domain... ARIs.com, then when you verify it, you know this is, I think, only valid within this specific domain. I think, for example, with BBS signatures, you can use the domain to create domain-specific proof. So for every domain you prove, the signature will be the same, but in different domains, the signature will be different. So you can only correlate it within yourself.
Okay, so that gets tied to the cryptography, which is why it's included there. Okay.
Yeah, I think this is a pattern that comes from authentication patterns. The challenge should be different every time too, which means that you just can't replay it. And so I think the domain is kind of a convenience there that comes from sort of, the authentication side of things.
Okay, thanks.
So another way would be to use Div Presentation Exchange, and we just require... basically we make a request, also include the challenge domain, and we basically specify a div presentation definition that says, like, we want to authenticate your DID before issuing a credential. I think the benefit of this is we already support this attachment format in Hyperledger ARIs. We have an RFC for it. We would need to do a separate run of the present proof protocol, but I'm not sure if that's too big of a problem, if we can just like hide it from the interaction, for example, with the user you have, then that doesn't seem to be a problem, I think. But we do need to recognize the specific presentation definition. We need to know to basically, all right, I need to do DID authentication now. And because the presentation exchange spec is quite complex, it can be hard to know exactly what you need, but maybe this is something we could solve using goal codes, that we have a specific goal code defined for doing DID authentication using Div Presentation Exchange. We could also do this as part of the credential manifest. It embeds it like as a property. I think it's basically the same, but we wouldn't need a separate run of the protocol. But it would mean, I don't think a lot of implementations support credential manifest at the moment. I think mostly it's the custom ARIs RFC. And another would be to just extend the current RFC 0593 and basically add this specific feature. I looked at the OpenID Connect for verifiable credential issuance. And basically what they do is they require the the holder to provide a proof that says basically, all right, this is my DIT ID, and I include a proof that proves it. So it's very specific to this use case. We extend it. And that would also be a possibility. Not sure if that can be a addition or needs to be a breaking change. I'm not sure how we could include that. Yeah, the other one was sending a separate DITCOM message, but as we just discussed, that only worked for ED25519 keys that we can basically transform to a signing key. And another one would be to always use a connection DIT. I don't like these approaches. I was just thinking that could be two possibilities. I think in general, using the DIFP protocol looks the most, the best approach to me, because I think we don't have to change any protocols. We just have to specify, all right, what does it look like? How can you recognize that that we're doing DIT authentication? And then agents can just choose to support it. We can run this protocol as sort of a sub-protocol when issuing a credential. So we start the credential issuance, and then we start this protocol with the parent thread ID basically being the credential issuance protocol, and we specify the goal code. And once we have the signed self-signed presentation back, we know, all right, this is the credential subject, and we can include that in the credential. So basically my question is, has anyone else looked at this? Do they have like approaches that they think would work well here?
So this is related to a concept that we've talked about historically, but not for a while. We've talked about the need to be able to prove DID ownership that is different than the DID that you're using for the relationship. And the context that this came up was not the issuance of, you know, needing to verify the subject of a credential, but needing to verify that you are connected with a well-known DID, even though you're using a pairwise DID. The classic case here is, let's say I connect with my bank and they rotate to a pairwise DID as part of that process. And somewhere along the line, either I forget or there are other DIDs that they control, and I wouldn't want to verify that they have control of those DIDs. And so this is a similar problem, but was approached not with credential presentation, you know, verification necessarily, or credential issuance rather. And so that was the context that was brought up in. And so what I had imagined at the time was for the general problem of needing to prove DID ownership was a protocol that allows you to disclose which DIDs you control simply by returning a signature across those DIDs, or a request for proving of a particular DID, which could sort of guide that. And the concept there would be useful for that, generally speaking, to be able to prove that in a world where you have more than one DID, you could prove ownership of a totally different one than is used for the relationship. But that would also apply here in the sense that you could then prove which, you know, DID, you could prove ownership of a different DID, which would then of course be valid for the issuance or the subject of the issued credential. So not exactly this problem, but I think at the underlying level, we have discussed this, but there are no RFCs that were ever created discussing this topic, though I clearly remember discussing it in a working group, but it was probably a while ago, like a year or more.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about adding a new protocol to do this. I think what's nice about that approach and also then this approach is that we could use it for other use cases than just issuing a credential, where this will only be applicable to, right, I need to authenticate a DID for issuing a credential if we have something like this, or a custom protocol. It could be used for any way to, indeed, if you have a connection or just send a message and request DID authentication.
Thoughts from anybody else? in the development of the protocol, I had imagined it would be a little bit like feature discovery in the sense that you could just voluntarily disclose things. The challenge with that is that, no pun intended, is that normally you prove things by signing a challenge. And to voluntarily disclose, you would not have a challenge from the other party, which would allow you to replay should you have an assertion from somebody else, you could just replay that because of the non-unique challenge. The only way around that is to agree about the format of the challenge. For example, a timestamp that was within a certain amount of time, or perhaps the challenge could contain the DIDs you're using for the relationship you're proving it over. And if you did that, then you would of course limit the replayability of the assertion that you're making. And of course, in a protocol where you provide your own challenge, then it just signs the challenge.
Yeah. Do you think that would be a better way to approach it, to define a custom protocol for something like this instead of using existing protocols and leveraging that?
I have mixed feelings. I think that defining a protocol would solve the problem generically speaking, but we also haven't apparently needed to solve that problem generically speaking in the past however long. And so I still anticipate it being a feature that we would need outside of credential issuance, except I don't have evidence to support that guess that we will need to. The nice part about it is it stays relatively simple without necessarily dropping to sort of providing it as a self-signed credential or something similar. So I don't know, I have mixed feelings about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think a custom protocol with support for signed attachments could be relatively simple to implement. Well, leveraging DIFP, well, if you have already implemented it, it's nice, but it's probably a lot more complex to do in the end. And also, what if the DIFP goes to V2, then we need to also update it. Like, we need to stay up to date with the specs. And what if DIFP is not as relevant anymore? Then we need to find a new spec. Well, the DID authentication way in DIDCOM could be relatively stable, I guess.
Richard, you were going to say something.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt the discussion because I'm a little bit farther away from your depth. If you wouldn't mind, I would simply ask naive questions, but I also don't want to hold you off.
Please do. We only have a couple minutes, unfortunately, but please do ask questions.
Okay. So I was wondering, isn't that already part, getting the DID authentication, isn't that already part of a key exchange, respectively, of a DID connection, like AEP 1.0? You exchange keys, and by doing so, you would eventually encrypt the messages. Thus, only the recipient of and the owner of the private key correspondingly will be able to read the message. So wouldn't that already classify as a sufficient authentication of the DID?
It does, but only for the DID you're using in the relationship itself. So if I have a pairwise relationship, or there's a sort of a generally better known DID that I would like to be the subject of a credential or to prove to you that I own. So this is about proving a different DID than is used in the relationship, not the same one, because you're correct. There's no need to prove ownership of the DID that is part of the relationship because it literally happens on every message.
Oh, got it. I missed that part. Okay, thanks.
And it would also require certain characteristics to on the DID, because you would need, for DIDCOM, you need key agreement keys. Well, for this, you need authentication keys. So that would mean your DIDCOM relationship must be built on a DID document that has at least key agreement keys and authentication keys, which, for example, if we use the DID key method, is not always the case. So it limits the scope of which DID methods we can use it with.
Well, DIDCOM itself kind of is going to end up with that restriction anyway, at least in DIDCOM V2, because of the need to both encrypt things and sign things. And you can either use an ED25519 key, which provides you both, or you need to provide both a key agreement key and an authentication key, a verification key is sometimes called, in order to function. And so that's kind of a requirement anyway.
Well, yeah, but not for, like, if you use a DIT key, DIT method key, is valid for inclusion in a credential subject ID, which we couldn't do using DITCOM because it doesn't support services. So that would limit DIT method key from this approach.
That's a totally really valid point, Timo, in that you could use a key as the subject, which means that when you go to present the credential, all you have to do is prove key ownership at the same time. And that would be sufficient. And so having you're right. You're totally correct. Stephen, did you have something to add?
Yeah, not enough in this time, and I got to think about it a little more. Really want to take a look through this document. I'm thinking that an attachment might work here for a general purpose, but I got to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah. Please do. Like, it's not high priority or something, but it's just something I think is missing and would be nice if we can solve it.
The only thing, Timo, I would add to the top of your document is, here's where I want to use this. I know one of the places you want to use this is when issuing a credential, but it'd be nice to have a few other use cases that came up.
Yeah, Sam, what did you say as use case?
There's times where it might be useful to know what other DIDs the other party has related to it. So this could be like, hey, for example, if I just have a relationship and I ask you to issue a credential, you're actually probably maybe going to issue that credential using a different issuer DID than the one I know you by, which is okay. And if you issue me a credential, then I there have, you know, I already have verification that that is true. But there's cases where it's nice to know, like, well, who are you? This could be let's say someone asks for a presentation and I have a machine readable governance file that lists the approved verifiers for some use case. And because I'm using a pairwise DID, I don't know who you are and you don't show up on my approved list. So I could ask you to disclose other DIDs you control. And one of those DIDs could be one of the DIDs that actually is present in the machine readable governance file. And then I would advise that the user actually present the credential because it's an approved verifier. That's an example of needing to do this outside of an issuance case. So I guess credential related, but yeah, cool. Okay, we've got to drop. Timo, I will try and put together a sketch of what this protocol would actually look like if we were to use the protocol example. I'm not insisting in any way that happened, but I think that having a sketch of what that looks like could be useful.
Yeah, I think I also would be interested. Thanks.
Cool. I added that HackMD to the agenda notes, and so that's available. I hope that was okay. And then I will. And then we can see what we can put together and review this again next week.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Timo. Thank you, everyone. And sorry we ran over. We'll see you all later and next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.